Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Labarz. Thanks for joining us for episode 52. And it's really nice to be back in the chair after a week off. And I have to admit, Rick, it was my fault last week. Got a bout of gastro. And I won't go into any details, but the word I'll use, violent. That's all I'll say is violent.
You poor guy. And I didn't allude to it. If those people who listened to our bulletin last week, I didn't allude to it. No, we are busy. I was telling the truth. But what I didn't add in was how violent the episode was for you.
It was. And can I elaborate a little bit in the sense that it hit me on Saturday morning. The Friday night just before that, we had our school information night. So there I was in the classroom. I felt $1 million at the time, shaking hands with parents, hanging around talking to everyone. Went home thinking, weekend, I'm excited. I honestly felt brilliant until about 3 a.m. Saturday morning. And as I got sicker and sicker, I thought, gee, I shook a lot of hands Friday night. I wonder how many parents I passed that on to. Thankfully, no one's come up to slap me or tell me off or anything like that yet. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen.
Well, I'm not a doctor, but the question would be, did you catch it that night before the weekend or did you pass it on?
That's a good question.
It's $1 million question.
See, I wonder if it was gastro or food poisoning, because my daughter had it a week ago, had gastro a week ago, just very briefly. And it had been 4 or 5 days, so we thought, well, we haven't got that. But no, I should have touched more wood because it hit me pretty hard.
There's a lot of teachers around the traps getting sick already, Adam, and students. So things go around school so easily, don't they? And
yep.
We had a possible chickenpox outbreak, which seems to have been maybe a false alarm. But
yep.
Because you're in, like a lot of people are in these open classrooms and double classrooms, everyone has to be notified, don't they?
Yeah, it spreads quickly.
Yeah, it does spread quickly.
Gets through those kids. And the other one that like that is that spreads quickly. Sorry to go off on a tangent. The old hair lice or nits. Oh, one kid gets that, the notes go home to everyone, and the parents are sticking all sorts of cleaning products and things in their hair. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, we've got secondary teachers who listen. I wonder, is head lice an issue at secondary schools? I don't recall as a student really having it, but certainly it's prevalent in the early years of primary school.
It is. And once one kid gets it, it's on for all money. They can jump pretty far, apparently.
I've heard of some prep teachers, Adam, that have in their shower, in the little rack, they have the shampoo, the conditioner, the shower gel, what have you. Mm. And then they have the head lice remover bottle in there as well.
I don't doubt that for a second. Thankfully, that's one thing I don't have to buy. No, although when I say that to people, the kids will go, yeah, well, they could get in your beard. Oh, little smarty pants, aren't they? So listen, mate, let's get straight into it. As you mentioned last week in the bulletin, got 3 really good topics, mate. So let's get going. So, Rick, right off the top, we need to talk about the big issue, I suppose, that's been all over the papers and the news and media for the last week, and obviously that's the Ultranet. We don't really want to have to talk about it again, but obviously the IBAC investigation into the botched thing around the Ultranet has been underway, and it's been very interesting to see a lot of people who, I think there was $250 million and a lot of dodgy dealings behind the scenes. These people have been called to take some responsibility for their actions and to face up to this, because really, mate, it turned out to be an absolute, it was just terrible, wasn't it? I can't even put it into words.
Yeah, well, a lot of people agree with you, Adam, and there are some out there that maybe don't agree as passionately, and that's what we're going to kind of touch on in this topic. But you're right, you've given a nice overview there of the issue, and it's really made headline news. And I think last week it was running as part of like the top news stories over about a period of 3 days.
Definitely trending.
And a lot of the stuff last week was about the the $1.4 million that apparently was spent on the extravagant entertainment and promotional stunts. And of course, we've been seeing footage of Daryl Fraser, the past Education Department Deputy Secretary. There's been footage of him with his tablet on the day of the opening on stage, telling the masses about how the Ultranet worked, or how it was supposed to work, because it had crashed that morning on that fateful day that we were all there with.
Do you remember that day? Do you actually remember? Sorry to stop you there. Do you remember that day? I mean, how excited everyone was, and how literally from 9 a.m. it just did not work at all. We couldn't get on.
Yeah, all I remember was speaking to people from other schools after it about what they used that day for afterwards, and that was giving staff a chance to show other tools and technology. Mm. Whereas I remember the school I was at the time kept persevering, talking about the Ultranet, but they couldn't actually show anything. And look, I kind of wished we had done that.
Yeah, we did a little bit of the same, but I was in my first year there, my current school was my first year, and middle of the year, I wanted to impress, had lots of things to show and everything, and nothing worked, and I just, I panicked, trying to fit something in. Let's talk about this, and you could see the staff losing interest really, really quickly.
Yeah, and I felt sorry for people like yourself who had been put into that role for many months, who had to try and share and sell the Ultranet to the rest of staff. It was a hard job.
It was.
Look, I must admit, I had a chuckle, though, with some of this news coverage, Adam, because I sent out a tweet about a week ago with a link. And you find it in my tweet stream. 45 seconds into a video that was shared by The Age on one of the articles about the investigation showed some of the entertainment that $1.4 million went towards, and it was a bunch of dancing girls dancing and singing along to an adapted version of Madonna's Material Girl. Yeah. I'm an Ultranet girl. Yeah. And I laughed.
How couldn't you?
How couldn't you? And look, it made the whole thing look more embarrassing. Yeah. And of course, the media are good at that, at making things look even
and of,
more
and of course, you think about Daryl Fraser walking around tapping his iPad and things. I think he got himself confused with Steve Jobs. Like, he was walking around introducing the new iPhone 3 or, you know, something like that. He was walking around when he was actually introducing something that was going nowhere.
Exactly. The reason why I wanted to talk about Adam was not to just bag out the Ultranet. And I do want to touch on maybe some of it, because I heard, and we've talked about some of these people before, there are some people who are in our PLN who championed the Ultranet for the right reasons, because it was there and it was being paid for. And these people had skills already in using digital tools, and they took those skills to the Ultranet and made some of it work. And those people know who they are. So my big question was, when I was looking at some of this coverage last week, was did the Ultranet project, did it put digital technology in schools and the attitude towards it back a few years with the way that it kind of didn't work? Mm. Or did it actually maybe help? My thinking was that for some people it was like, well, that doesn't work. Here's something better. Mm. And let's use that.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I think it was a two-part process. I think the people who championed it, who were behind it, kind of did that, went, well, this is not working. Is there another platform that we can use? And I know we've spoken about Edmodo, for example, before, that did exactly the Ultranet, but did it better and did it for free and all those things. But the other part was for those people who already had their, they weren't sure about it. To see it go down like that would have been very easy to sit there and go, well, I told you so. Stinking technology. Never works, does it? No, I'm not touching this thing, well, you know, and doing all those sorts of things.
Absolutely. Let's touch on that side for a second, because right. I think that would have been a very common opinion from people. Particularly, I remember hearing a lot of dissent on that day when it crashed, when we were all there waiting for it to start. I think it was the worst thing that could have possibly happened at that time for digital tech, particularly for some of those people. And it's the fear, Adam, isn't it? I'm not sure how to use this. Yep. I've got this day off to try and learn, but now it's crashed. How am I going to learn? I think there was a bit of fear in that. How am I going to learn? Because the kids are going to be back tomorrow.
Yep.
If it's back online, do I have to use it? I think I can understand that, but that also really worried me, because then it put people, perhaps like you and myself, had put us under the pump as well, because we believe in this stuff and we wanted to make it work.
It made it really easy for those people to be pessimistic every time it came up. So in a few weeks' time, if you had a staff meeting where you wanted to bring it up and show something, you could easily say, well, is it going to work this time? You know, it's working this time. Oh, it's clunky. And any time something went even slowly wrong, even just slightly, it would have been, it's down again. It's not working again. And you got to go, no, well, if you just click over here, it brings it up. That was hard to find. It makes it really easy for those people to have that pessimistic view and really not get behind it. Because new technology, you need everyone on board, otherwise it's not going to work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one thing that disappointed me about it was that, because I know you did yourself, and a lot of the people we know and work with in education in Victoria were involved with trying to get the Ultranet happening in their schools. What did disappoint me, and that's come out in some of the IBAC stuff that we've read, is the way that they tended to get the company that would develop it, and that it was done in a way where, to me, it sounds completely like the wrong company designed it. Mm. And then we used to talk about some of the words and the lingo that they used in the Ultranet just did not sound like any other kind of platform, and it was clunky in that way. And to think that it could have been better now that that's come out is really disappointing, because people like yourselves, I was disappointed with it, but I would still, a couple of years later after it was launched, would go to some PDs and come back to the school and try and get it going.
And it's a shame, because obviously the education department, not necessarily their fault, put the wrong people in charge, and those people who were in charge saw two things. One, they could get their mates jobs, and make a quick buck. And that's what they did, and they didn't really have their heart in making the Ultranet a really great platform for teachers. It was half-hearted, and it never worked properly, but those guys lined their pockets with it and got their mates lots of really high-end jobs. And you know, I think there was an article about a guy who was simply just a maths physics teacher at a high school who all of a sudden got some amazing jobs and was making $150,000 to $200,000 a year, who is going up in front of this one and being hauled over the coals rightly, because, gee, he made a lot of money and didn't do a lot to get there. So
yeah that's really disappointing. On the plus side, I think it really opened up more educators than before to think about that the possibilities out there, because like I mentioned before, then I guess it may have gave teachers a chance to say, well, look, if that's not working, the Ultranet, here's what I've been using. Yeah. Here's Edmodo. And now we know a lot of schools have bought into things like Compass and Central and these learning management systems that don't necessarily do everything that the Ultranet was saying to do, but they've got places for students to be. Mm. And you can kind of marry these management systems now with things like Edmodo and blogs, Global 2 still. And so perhaps there is that positive side of it, that people now are seeing things that are easy to use and are available.
Yeah, well, the Ultranet was the best thing that ever happened to sites like Edmodo, wasn't it? Because while it didn't work for some, they kind of went, well, I like the idea of it. Is there something else out there that will do this? Bang, all of a sudden come across something like Edmodo. This is exactly what we want. This is exactly what the education department should have done. So I'll go and use that instead.
Yeah, I completely agree. So if you, we'd like to hear maybe your take on the Ultranet and whether, particularly any success stories that we don't know about, and whether you think it changed people's perceptions of digital technology. And we'll share it again. Go and watch the Ultranet Girl video.
Please do. It's a riot.
Well, Adam, I'm going to touch on an article that you shared with me over the last week. It came from the Mamma Mia website, written by Mandy Nolan, and it's about parents bullying teachers. And it's quite a passionate article, and we thought we'll put it up on the blog for you to read. We thought we'd talk about that parent-teacher relationship and where perhaps it has changed since you and I were at school. Mandy, in her article, talks really hard about how these days many parents are very quick, this is what she believes, very quick to going in. If there's an issue with their student, maybe they're not getting a concept or they're upset at home, immediately going in on the defence and, well, she says blaming the school. And she believes that back in her day, maybe when she was a student, that her parents would have been asking her the question, saying, well, why is your report card like this? Why is... And she believes that the times have changed. More parents now are more, I guess, believing their child all the way and that it must be the school's fault.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, mate. I think it also comes back to, and I think it happens more and more, that the parents, it's a twofold thing, that they want to be, you know, almost friends with their kids instead of being a parent, and also that they kind of feel like that, you know, it's an easy way for them to diffuse the situation and lay the blame somewhere else. So the kid comes home and going, you know, I got into trouble at school today, I'm not happy about it, and they crack it. Well, an easy thing for me to do is go straight up to the school, go to the principal, go to the teacher, and slam them. And the kid can see that in action. They come in and go, no, don't worry, I told your teacher off, and the kid feels better about it, and it's solved. Hmm. But it's not solved, is it? There needs to be a better way than that.
I think, she puts a disturbing statistic in the article, which we know a little bit about, is about violence against principals in particular. Mm. And that a study last December found that school principals in New South Wales were 5 times more likely to be threatened than the general population. And we know that there is, I think there's some sort of investigation or survey going on at the moment to really address that. That apparently that statistic is climbing in Victoria as well. Mm. But it makes me think that of our experiences at schools at the moment as teachers. I think there are a large group of families around the country that are using the school as a place to try and solve maybe issues that are at home.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Because we do hear teachers a lot say, well, that particular student is well organised at school, is very calm, seems really happy, and yet it's complete opposite at home. Mm. And then the school starts having to try and work out and solve the issue at home.
And you end up feeling guilty. I don't know about you, but they come up with that, and of course you're not going to turn them away. So it's, oh, okay, well, here's some strategies I use in the classroom and things. And then you see them again and it's still not working at home and you almost feel guilty. But our job is to educate our job is not to be a parent. Mm. And I think that's where the lines today in society get really blurred, in that there's this expectation that not only do I have to teach, but I have to teach them all these life skills and how to be, you know, how to act and things. And I've also got to play that parent role. That's not my role. I'm sorry. I'm not paid to do that. I'm paid for them to come in and educate, and I will teach them life skills and I'll teach them these things. But when they go home, that's your responsibility. So if they're not reading with you at home and they're cracking it, you need to try and, you know, put your foot down. Well, I'm sorry, well, you're not going outside to play. You're not having this. You're not having that. Until you sit here and do this, don't go, oh, well, okay. And then you come into the teacher and go, well, you know, they're not doing this. They're not doing that. What should I do? Be a parent. Be hard on them, you know. It's, yeah, it's something for me that I know it's not as easy as that, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know.
No, I think what you're trying to say is valid. I think perhaps that there are a lot of parents these days that don't believe that the school has their students' best interests at heart.
Mm.
And they kind of get into this feeling that kind of an automatic response, you know, that maybe harks back to the way they felt about school.
Mm.
Now, let's, on the positive side, there are a lot of parents, a lot of families that are extremely supportive. And
We need to make that clear.
Yeah, it is. But if the violence levels are going up, it does go to show that there is some kind of, this is happening in schools more than it's happening in other businesses. People aren't going into, and as this writer points out, they're not going into Centrelink and complaining about, well, maybe they are, but they're not being violent towards those people. No. They're not. I mean, nurses and police even maybe caught this, you know, where the outside public have got big comments to say and opinions on their profession.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, when we cop that, don't we? We cop that. And what is going through a parent's mind that they get to the point where they want to go up and threaten violence against the principal? I think what gets lost in that is the principal and the teachers and everyone within the school community has the best interests of their kids at heart. And if things aren't going wrong, I encourage parents to come up, but come up and talk about it. Talk to me as a human being. Come up and go, look, you know, such and such has come home really upset about something that happened in the yard today. They're saying they got into trouble and they didn't do anything. Can you just clarify? Can you elaborate for me? And then we can actually say, well, actually, I'm sorry, but six kids saw such and such do this in the yard. And it's, oh, okay, well, he didn't tell me that. And it's the nature of kids to lie. I mean, you go to school and, did you do this? No. You know, they automatically say no. They don't want to get into trouble. So, of course, they're going to change their tune a little bit.
And that's part of them learning, you know, that the world exists kind of outside your own little world, doesn't it? Yeah. So,
it does.
Look, it's a huge topic. We're only touching on it briefly. And, you know, we aren't here to put a fork in between schools and parents and families,
not.
Of course. But we just want to touch on the things that are worrying sometimes for our profession and our leaders.
It is. It's an encouragement, too. We want to encourage parents. And I think we've done this previously, but we want to encourage parents to come up and see us. You know, we want to come and see. We want to have that relationship. And just come and treat us like human beings. Come up and have that chat. Even if you're really upset, just remember, we really do have the best interests of your kids at heart.
Absolutely. Well, as mentioned in the bulletin last week, Adam, you shared an article about a 30-year teacher looking back with gratitude on their career. They wrote a reflective piece in The Age, and we thought we'd touch on perhaps at this stage in our career what might be the things in the future that we look back on when we retire. Because a lot of the kind of retirement reflections that I've read in the news over the last couple of years, things that I can remember, the overriding message has kind of been about how the profession has changed, particularly for people who are retiring in their 60s or slightly younger or older, is the changing in the profession and also the stuff that they're happy to leave behind. And some of the things that they're happier to leave behind and perhaps the things that have come in the last, 10 years perhaps.
Yep.
The heavy use of data, the performance anxiety kind of stuff. And the stuff that they will miss is still those light bulb moments with kids.
Yeah.
Little conversations you have with students, and just the thank yous. And this particular writer, this is what I want to touch on, that it mentions how sometimes it can just take one thank you out of one whole entire class to really make you feel like, well, that was worth it today.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes back to that kid that you see that gets it and on their way out, you know, they don't necessarily say thank you, but they're so happy that they've gotten a thing. They'll just say, oh, you're the best teacher ever, Mr. Kayla Thompson. And they'll walk out the door, and you know that's their way of saying, thank you for helping me. Thank you for helping me understand a topic or a concept that I didn't get. And that's all it takes. And we've spoken about Christmas before. Sometimes a simple card that even a parent's jotted in to say, thank you so much for the year, you know, the difference you've made, that would beat out to me any present you could possibly get me. To see that, you know, they're reflected on the year and the impact you've made is fantastic. Nothing can replace that.
I utterly agree. And it can, because you sometimes over, and I'm sure leadership principals see this more often, but sometimes over the period of a year, you might only interact with parents that maybe have a gripe, or maybe have a student that is difficult to work with. And sometimes, look, that's okay, because sometimes some students and families do need more of your time than others. But to get sometimes those thank yous that have come unexpected, as you said, from students and parents, can really make it for you. And I completely agree. Yeah. And I'd like to think, so that's one thing for me personally. I think I'd look back when I retire on perhaps some of those students that came along and families that I seem to connect with, and you'd like to think that you've made a difference in some way there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the things you think? I mean, we're at similar ages, I guess, similar experience.
I'd love to even think back now. We've been teaching 10 years, mate. If you think back to when we first started, some of the changes even that have happened in 10 years. I mean, imagine us starting in 10 years and someone telling us, you know, in 10 years' time, guys, every kid's going to be bringing in an iPad, and we'd actually be going, what's an iPad?
What is that?
I mean, that's been in 10 years. Imagine in, you know, you and I sitting here together over a beer in 25 years' time, you know, or whatever, when we've retired, sitting here and going, I can't believe that every kid in their desk has a built-in iPad and a built-in ability and all these things. I mean, we laugh about it now, but if the changes we see like that are in just in 10 years, I mean, imagine when we sit here and even in another 10 years and the things that these kids are going to have. Maybe imagine if they all had Apple Watches. They all had to have it and they could cling and do things. I mean, the sky's the limit, isn't it?
It is. Technology, certainly, and learning. We know that learning is still forever changing, and a lot of schools are still trying to catch up. Well, I've been thinking about something like this lately, of late, Adam, and I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here and reveal a personal sort of feeling. That I after nearly 11 years, I still think that, and this could just be me, you know, not believing in myself a lot, but I still think that the best effect I've had on maybe some of my students is purely based on relationship and being able to work with them well and make them be happy at school. And some would say that's great, but I just feel that that's not held up as something that's... A lot of parents have said to me how much they value that sort of stuff.
Do you think the relationships is underrated by leadership?
I don't know if it's...
Sometimes, you know...
I'm not sure. Yes, probably by some. I'm not going to...
No. I don't mean it in that way, but...
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think possibly. And I don't think... I don't think that's fully prevalent across the board. But I think maybe it's not necessarily leadership not caring, but it's just the environment of schools these days with the amount of expectation on you to push up your results that sometimes just having a good relationship... Well, look, it's expected. When you get into the profession, it's expected that you will build relationships with the kids. We learned that at university, didn't we? And I think that's where it goes. It's like leadership and schools will go, but that's just part and parcel of your job. But I don't think... it's valued or given, because it's not measured.
I was going to say the same thing. Relationships you build aren't measurable. There's the 5-6 the school survey. The school survey where they might do that one, but that's a bit wishy washy too. But there's no data to say that. Geez, you've done well with your relationships this year. It comes verbally or it comes via a card or something like that, and you can't send that off to be measured.
That's where I think maybe my strength still lies. After all of the learning I've done, you know, I still think my strength is in that. But it'll never be kind of measured, you know. So, you know, those people who go in with, you know, job interviews, you can show all this great data and how they've helped this student. You know, I always still feel like that's something that I'm not so good at. But I know that I can have a safe and positive relationship with a student and click with them, you know.
And that's important, mate. So, look, we want to reach out to... We've got a variety of listeners who have been in the teaching profession for a couple of years, some who have been here for 20 or 30 years. We'd love to hear some of the changes and some of the surprising things that you think back and think that there's no way 10, 20 years ago I would have thought that would be in a classroom. Even if you've been teaching 5, there may have been some really major changes. So if you've got anything you'd love to share, we'd love to hear about it. So, mate, it's time for the anecdote, and you're up.
I am, Adam, and I'm going to talk about something that is very... Well, I think it's Victoria-centric, but I believe that this program I'm going to talk about goes into schools. And primary school teachers definitely will be able to jump in with this topic, Adam, and it's the old life education van.
What a ripper.
It always makes me giggle. Look, it's a great program. I just want to give a disclaimer. Great program. For those people outside the country or anyone who's unsure about it, so the Life Education Van is actually quite a large van that gets There's a few of them, I think, and they get driven around the country, and they get dropped off at a school, and then for, I think, once over a period of
every day, they're trying to fit in three or four sessions a day.
Yeah, most grades will go in to learn about how their bodies work, how to look after their bodies, about health.
Yeah, drugs and things
drugs,
like that.
Drugs, smoking, And it's always a very valid program.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about it because you have just completed with your class the life education van during the week, and it's my anecdote, Adam. This week, but some of the stuff you've been regaling to me just made me think we need to talk about the life.
I must admit, I'll say I love the program. I'm highly disappointed in the use of Harold. Now, Harold, I've been a big fan of Harold for a long time.
So can I just jump in for a second? Because I knew you were going to bring Harold up.
Yeah.
So to paint a picture a little bit more, so for those folks out there that don't know, so the van parks in your school.
Yes.
When your time is allocated, you take your class over and you go inside the van, and it's kind of like a mini classroom, isn't it?
It's very long.
It's on carpet. The walls are carpeted.
It stars across the top.
It's quite a peaceful sort of place.
It's really nice.
Before you talk about who Harold is, that's what I don't know. At my old school was the last time I did the life education van, and they used to park the van up the top of a hill.
Yep.
So it was kind of parked, it must have been a hell of a park break, because it was still on a hill.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
And when I used to go in there, particularly the last time, I used to get a bit of vertigo when I went in there. And I'm not great with motion sickness. Buses tend to freak me out a little bit.
Yep.
But I used to go in there and I'd kind of feel like I was... like in a jumping castle or something.
I can understand. I had a couple of kids go down with sore tummies and need to go and stand outside for a couple of minutes. And
well, that was Mr. KT.
And then she was talking about what
drugs are dangerous and that. And I thought, I feel like I've had one right now. I feel like I've popped something before I went in there.
Had a bit of the ganja.
Tell us about how did you catch up with Harold during the week?
I'm disappointed because I get excited because you know me really well and people who know me really well. These sorts of days, I really get into it simply because I get into it because I want the kids to. If they see Mr. Lavaz going, we'll get Harold out later. Oh, Harold, I'll get a bit excited. They do too. Very disappointed in Harold's appearance this year. He came out looking very dusty, very dirty, like he had a really rough night out. Like he'd been ignoring all the things that the life had been putting forward. He'd been out on the turf the night before. He came in, he almost had sort of brown dust on his nose. You know,
the funny thing about Harold is that he's a toy giraffe, isn't he?
He's a puppet giraffe.
Who doesn't speak.
He doesn't speak, and he's down inside this square. It's kind of like he's down there with all the wires and all this stuff, and he comes out every now and again. I'm going to keep trying to talk about it. He comes out, so the hand goes in, and he comes out. And then it's just, what was that, Harold? And he comes over and says it in the ear and stuff. Not even any ventriloquism skills.
Because there's a massive build-up to Harold coming out in a lesson. Yeah. Well, actually, no, he doesn't come out to the end of the week sometimes, does he?
And can I add in there as well, the kids get excited. Oh, we're going to see Happy Harold this week. Yeah, Happy Harold, he's been out on the terps all week. He can't even talk. It's kind of like he's waking up with a hangover that he can't he can't even talk anymore. Disappointing.
I think, as you said, the person who runs the life ed sticks the hand in behind the curtain and brings him out. And there's almost this groan from the... sigh from the kids when they realise that Harold's only going to whisper in the host's ear and not actually talk to the kids.
You know, and he come around, they give him a bit of a pat, wipe a bit of the dust off. It's disappointing. The one thing I wanted to talk about as well that I think, that I find the 5.6s in every life ed van up in one of the corners is actually above where Harold is. There's the body, there's the life size sort of thing, the body where you can take parts off, and it doesn't take long for a few of the boys to start nudging each other and pointing up there at the muscles of the breasts that are there, and they can point up there and you can see them go, up there, they start whispering to each other, there's giggles going around and that sort of stuff where they see it, and then anytime it's brought out and things have got to be taken off and that those muscles in that area has to be taken off, they do that look around, around at their mates and go, did you see that get taken off, can't help themselves, ridiculous.
No, they can't. It's funny, isn't it, because it's kind of it's, I guess for the 3-4s who do it, it's kind of like their first time really looking at how parts of the body work, and it's kind of like that first little bit of insecurity and nervousness that comes before the puberty program.
That's right. They don't know where the muscles go. They don't know what they look like either. So when they have it up on the side and you've got to sort of Velcro them on, the brain ends up where the lungs are. You've got a kidney in the brain, that sort of stuff. And the lady's trying, that probably goes down a little bit further. And you're trying to talk it through. So anyway.
Well, we look at it. We hope that. I'd love to hear some anecdotes about other people who have met Happy Harold over the last few years or even the past few weeks. And let's be honest. The main question we want to hear is, did you get to meet a clean Harold?
Yeah.
Or a somewhat dirty, dishevelled Harold.
Who looked like he fell asleep in the car park the night before. Well, mate, that brings an end to episode 52. And I know from speaking to you, we've got the next few weeks are free. So unless that violent bout of gastro makes a return, we'll be here for the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope it doesn't, Adam. And in terms of this term, we're kind of already about nearly halfway through the term. It's absolutely flying. So we intend to churn out a good run of episodes leading up until Easter, Adam.
Yeah, we do. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson. And the two of us have been two regular teachers.